This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Mariota. The pass, it's deflected in the air! It is picked off, potentially, by Washington! It is! It's Kendall Fuller!
Did it again, boys and girls. They found a way to win another game. They've won three in a row, not for the first time this year, for the second time this year. They have a three-game winning streak. That is six out of the last seven. They are 7-5 overall. And as of this moment, they are in the seventh and final spot in the NFC playoff race. Wow. Good morning. A good football game yesterday between two evenly matched teams. That interception in the end by Kendall Fuller off the Daron Payne deflection of a Marcus Mariota second and goal throw pretty much clinched a huge win for Washington. A game similar to the Tennessee game really earlier this year, but in reverse. In that game, if you recall, it was Washington's quarterback Carson Wentz who threw the interception in a goal-to-go situation with the game on the line. Yesterday, they got a favor, returned with what could be a play we look back on at the end of the year and say it was one of the key defining difference-making plays of their season. Because at 6-6 and tied with the Falcons and losing a tiebreaker down the road with the Falcons, that was a massive ending. Now, they would have gotten the ball back had Atlanta scored with time for perhaps Taylor Heinicke to create some magic yesterday where there wasn't necessarily much magic in the passing game. But what a big play by Daron Payne. What a catch by Kendall Fuller. And wow, has this team turned it around, surging into a playoff spot as of now, with two of the biggest games head-to-head against the Giants in a long time, sandwiched in between by their bye week, the latest of any of the NFL teams. Two games that will say a lot about which of the two teams heads to the postseason and which team could get left behind, although it's possible that we are headed to a first in the history of this great NFL. Washington at 7-5, two games over 500, in last place in the NFC East, would be in the playoffs if the season ended today. That's never happened, an entire division making the postseason. Of course, it couldn't happen until 2020 when they expanded the postseason field from six playoff teams in each conference to seven. Nonetheless, if the NFC East produces four playoff teams, it'll be one hell of a feat. What a division it's been. I mean, this is why you cannot, year in and year out, be definitive about anything before an NFL season starts. You really can't even be sure of anything that you're seeing up until really, let's call it late October at this point. I mean, the NFC, least as it's been for years, not predicted to be very good this year. Washington and the Giants, not predicted to be that great. Washington, a little bit better than the Giants. Dallas and Philly to battle it out. Other divisions in the conference, much better. Four of them. The bottom team in the division is 7-5. No division's done what the NFC East has done this late into a season in NFL history since going to the four-division format back in 2002. Philly won last night 40-33 over Green Bay. By the way, they rushed for 364 yards. Jalen Hurts had 156 of those yards, if you weren't up to watch it. They're 10-1. Dallas off the win on Thanksgiving over the Giants is 8-3. The Giants have fallen to 7-4, and Washington, being the only team in the division that hasn't had its bye week yet, is 7-5. Washington moved into the seventh spot in the NFC race because Seattle lost to the Raiders at home in overtime late afternoon, 40-34. What a game that was, as Josh Jacobs ended up with well over 200 yards rushing and over 300 yards in total, setting a Raiders record. We'll get to some of the other NFL later on in the show. So the Seahawks dropped from 6-4 to 6-5 with that loss. By the way, a smell test selection the Raiders were. Smell test another winning weekend, Denton, at 9-5-1 overall, a 4-1-1 NFL Sunday. And man, did the Houston Texans work hard to try to get back and get us the cover at plus 14. They lost by 15. But Seattle is still alive. And of course, Washington, the Giants, the Cowboys, and Seattle right now, more than any of the other teams, are really the teams battling for the three wild card spots in the NFC. I've said this before, or certainly said it last week. I still think Dallas has a shot at winning the NFC East, but whichever team doesn't between Dallas and Philadelphia, that team will be in the playoffs for sure. Now, Washington, you know, sitting there in the seventh spot, is just a half game behind the Giants with head-to-head games against the Giants upcoming, and they are sitting there just a game and a half behind the Dallas Cowboys for the five spot in the NFC playoffs. Now, what is not really in play for Washington is the division. If Philly had lost last night, I would have told you that the division is not necessarily out of reach with the Eagles at 9-2 and Washington at 7-5 at that point. Because even though you're two games back, you still have five left and you split with the Eagles. But the Eagles winning last night in what was a wild game, they are solidly in first place. I'm going to get to everything involved in the game yesterday, which was one of those easy kind of tidy games to look at. There wasn't a whole lot going on in that football game with respect to, you know, craziness or crazy plays or coaching decisions that went wrong, etc. It was one of those games that was fast moving, few possessions, not a lot of plays offensively because both teams were intent on running the football, which they both did. I mean, hell, we got to the 2-minute warning in the game yesterday at 1:59 p.m. When have you ever seen that in a 1 o'clock start? We were at the 2-minute warning at 1:59 p.m. But I will get to my game take coming up here in just a few minutes. But I was somewhat reticent with respect to spending much time on this. But my God, very late last night as I was going through my Twitter feed from the day, it was dominated, as I'm sure much of the conversation between you and your friends potentially was yesterday, with what happened before the game. This team is on a roll. They've won 6 of 7. They're 7-5. They are not only a legitimate playoff contender, they are a threat to win a game in the playoffs. And depending on the matchups, who the hell knows? It's hard to put a limit on them, given what the NFC is right now. Philadelphia looked awesome last night. San Francisco, top to bottom, looks like, to me, the best team right now. Dallas certainly has the potential. The Vikings are really good, with the game on the line in close games. But Washington has already beaten Philadelphia. They certainly had a chance to beat the Minnesota Vikings, and I would not put anything past them, including a game on Christmas Eve with another one of the conference's powerhouses San Francisco. When this regular season is concluded, they will have played Philly twice, Dallas twice, San Francisco, and Minnesota. Very likely the four best teams in the conference. There will be a division winner out of the NFC South. Tampa lost yesterday. They lead the NFC South with a 5-6 record. But what we're going to know in terms of the head-to-heads, where Washington stacks up with some of these teams. But let's get to my what do you got before we get to the game take.
All right.
What do you got?
So, yeah, the Sean Taylor pregame honoring of him on what yesterday was the 15-year anniversary of his passing, with what they sent out in a press release last week was a series of what they referred to as key activations. That sounds like a consultant word to me. Key activations that would include, among other things, the reveal of the Sean Taylor Memorial installation is what they referred to it. They were also launching a limited edition Sean Taylor Legacy Project merchandise line, and a special 21 helmet decal was worn by the Commanders players on their helmets yesterday. The headliner, though, of the day was this ceremony at 11:45 a.m. on the main concourse level in the, I think it's the south end zone area, which, you know, if you've been in the stadium and you're looking out onto the field, if you're behind the actual Redskins bench, it would be the end zone to the right. I'm pretty sure that's where it was. I was not at the game yesterday. But at 11:45 a.m., they activated this Sean Taylor Memorial installation outside on that concourse level. They did it at 11:45 a.m. I don't know if they made people wait. I have no idea how organized the actual ceremony was. I've seen it on Twitter, certainly, but I have talked to many people who were involved and were there. So here are my thoughts on this. First, I want everybody to know, again, my perspective on this. I wasn't there. I talked to several who were there, fans, friends, former players, people associated with the organization, many of whom just reached out to me with basically a text message that started with OMG. I've certainly seen all of the social media feedback to this event. I was tagged on lots of it, which was not very positive. I would certainly say if I pulled this on Twitter, how'd they handle the Sean Taylor Memorial installation activation, that it would be not very well. But I wanted to make sure that before I get to my thoughts on this, that you understood that my reaction, my perspective on this may have been different had I been there. I doubt it, but I wasn't there. So let me get started. First, I'll say this. Whatever that memorial of Sean was, the thing that looked like a mannequin in the window of, like, you know, a Dick's Sporting Goods store. By the way, somebody sent me a tweet that said, "Sheehan, it looked like I was at Herman's." I know that that only resonates with a few of you, but Herman's was a sporting goods store back in, like, the 80s in D.C. There was one on Jennifer Street Northwest. I worked there. It was one of the many, many jobs I had. I was one of those kids who, at 13, my dad said, "You're working. Get out and get a job." During the summer and even during school when I wasn't involved in sports. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what that was. Of course, it was not done well. I mean, art is subjective. I understand that. But was that actually art? I don't know. I wasn't expecting a statue because they didn't say that there was going to be a statue. Many of you tweeted me and said, "Where's the statue? That's a statue?" They did not say, to be fair to them, when they described it as an activation of a memorial honoring Sean, that it was going to be a statue. Now, they did not say it was going to be a glass-encased mannequin made out of wires with no face and a jersey and pants that didn't match, and really looked like they went into like a training camp bin to fish out late last week. It really looked like one of the things we've seen with this franchise, remember, in recent years, kind of like a rush job. Like, hey, you know, we need something that looks like Sean Taylor by Sunday. Come on, guys, get on it. We've only got a few days left. I didn't personally think that whatever that was supposed to be done would be well done. But that one was not well done, clearly. I'm not here to say what some were saying, that it was disrespectful to Sean's memory. I don't know if that's true or not. I just don't think, you know, it didn't look like something that you would have expected in the activation of a memorial of Sean Taylor on the 15th anniversary of his passing. It really did look more like kind of a display case at a department store. But I think, you know, I'm not here to offer up solutions on what it should have looked like. You know, if I were involved in like the meeting, the creative meeting, maybe the one, you know, 30-minute meeting to discuss this, if they even had that, I would have probably suggested something like, you know, whatever you do, capture Sean in one of his moments. You know, to me, the moment is the dive into the end zone in Philadelphia after he picked up the loose ball on the ground and returned it for a touchdown on New Year's Day 2006, clinching a playoff berth and a 31-20 win over the Eagles, which, by the way, clinched a playoff trip to Tampa Bay and a playoff win. The last one this organization had 17 years ago was the last playoff win they had. I mean, I don't know that anybody in the organization would have remembered that play or would have known about that play. But, you know, capturing Sean in a Sean moment, there were plenty of Sean moments. That one, to me, the number one moment. But I can't sit here and tell you that I would have had a lot of great ideas, but it wasn't my job to come up with the ideas. So number one is clearly, whatever that was, it wasn't well done. Number two, and I want to make myself clear on this, because I do totally feel the same way most of you do, which it looked like a fourth grade art project. I wasn't super angry or emotional about this yesterday. And I tweeted something yesterday that said, essentially, look, at this point, as long as the family doesn't have a problem with it, let's move on. Let's get to the second half of the game. Because I think I tweeted something out at halftime. And I think some people misinterpreted what I said. I'm of course I understand they botched it, okay? But I wasn't surprised that they botched it. I wasn't angered by them botching it. I don't really feel anything about a lot of this stuff anymore. I expect this. We should all expect this. This is what we've gotten. And for me, like, it's basically, we're down to this. Until Dan and Tanya are gone, I'm going to expect their organization to be a complete and utter S show when it comes to anything that requires thought, planning, and execution. You know, for years, this franchise has been so limited in so many ways. I mean, limited intellectually, limited when it comes to being humble, limited when it comes to the ability to be self-aware, limited in its historical knowledge of its own franchise that it's running, you know, limited in understanding its customers, limited in understanding how to treat its customer base. You know, every possible way you could get things wrong, they've gotten it wrong. We all understand this, and we understand now with years of exposure to it that the root cause is the owner. So until he leaves, it's not going to change. You know, so I have come to expect this, and it doesn't anger me. There is one thing, however, and this is the thing that I'm going to kind of end with in this conversation, and then we're going to get to the game. I continue to be, you know, somewhat angry about those past players, teams, coaches, and how they've kind of been treated in this last year and a half of Sean. You know, and I want to preface this with, I know how important Sean Taylor is to many of you. For some of you, he's the best thing that you've known about this franchise. I get it. I understand it. I empathize. For some others, especially those of you like me who are a bit older and lived through the greatest coaches and players and teams in this team's history, you don't perhaps see Sean in the same way. But I hope yesterday was the last time we do Sean for a while. It's enough. Not because I don't think Sean Taylor was a great player on his way to being one of the all-time greats, because I do. Not because I wasn't crushed by his passing 15 years ago yesterday, because that week 15 years ago is a week that is indelible in my mind. It's a week that I will never personally forget, never. It was so tragic. It was so agonizing. It was so, so sad. I'll never forget being woken up with a phone call from my program director at the time, Todd Castleberry, at 4:45 a.m. in the morning, saying, "You got to get back in there. He passed away." And that was the morning after we had been told he was doing better and that he was going to survive and he was going to be okay. It was so sad. So sad for his family, so sad for his friends, and so sad for this city that had become a part of what he was building. You know, he was an adopted son, like a lot of those players are. God, he was fun to watch. A lot was lost that day, senselessly. But it seems to me Sean has been obsessed over so much over the last year by this organization that it's become kind of obvious to me anyway that they are in part going to Sean over and over again because, well, A, he's super important to the owner. B, they keep trying to change the conversation about them, which has been deservedly negative for many years, but intensely so over the last 2 years. And their sleight of hand move is Sean. And of course, anytime they try to change the conversation with some sort of an event that requires planning and execution, whether it's, you know, Sean and his jersey retirement or Sean and whatever they did on the other part of the club level, they do it very haphazardly. They do it in a very clumsy way. And that's the nicest way to put to really describe it, because clumsy almost makes them seem like they just made a few mistakes that are understandable, when in fact they make lots of mistakes because they're not very good at doing these kinds of things. You know, the one of my all-time favorite quote coaches was the great John McKay, who, when he left USC in 1975 to take over the expansion Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 1976, he had one great line after another over those first few years when they did not win a game. And he would say about this organization when trying to plan something, they don't plan very well, but they make up for it with terrible execution. It really is a total clown show when they try to do these things. But I don't want to see any more Sean Taylor days for a while. I don't want to see any more memorials. I don't want to see any more jersey retirements. And it's for three reasons. One, it's become too much of their go-to move. I think we can all see right through it. You can only go to the changeup so much before, you know, batters start whacking them out of the park. Number two, they don't do it well. You know, it always ends up being a source of embarrassment. And it's time for the embarrassment to be shared almost equally with others not named Sean Taylor. It's like it seems like all the Sean Taylor stuff ends up in embarrassment. I don't want to see him attached to that. Thirdly, and I know this angers some of you because I've said it in the past several times, Sean Taylor does deserve to be honored by this organization in certain ways and remembered forever. But if anybody in the organization knew anything about the organization, they would know that there's an appropriate order to the honoring of the past. Sean's jersey should not have been retired when it was retired. After the organization decided to start retiring jerseys after the only retired jersey was Sammy Baugh's, and they were protected, but they decided to start retiring them. There were several that should have gone before Sean. Bobby Mitchell definitely should have been the next one in line, and he was. But after that, it should have been Sonny, which they're going to do in the season finale this year. My God, help them do it without embarrassment to Sonny, or for that matter, themselves. Charlie Taylor, Daryl Green, Art Monk, John Riggins should have all had their jerseys retired before Sean's was. You know, this is not disrespectful to Sean. You know, I think you can debate whether or not his jersey should be retired, period. But I've always said it's an outlier in terms of a decision that can be made by the owner. It's a special case, obviously, because of the terrible tragedy. But, you know, if there was going to be a statue, which there wasn't, and they never said there would be, but if there was going to be something of significance that would stand in front of the stadium or on a concourse level, number one on that list is Joe Jackson Gibbs, period. End of discussion. And that should be it. You know, he's the first face sculpted on the Washington Redskins' Mount Rushmore. Again, I know how much Sean meant to so many of you, and I respect that, and I was just as crushed. But the organization before Dan arrived, before Sean arrived in 2004, was actually a great organization. It was a winner, 2 NFL championships, 3 Super Bowl titles, and many Hall of Fame players and coaches. I remember Sean picking up that ball in the Philadelphia game on New Year's Day and returning it for a touchdown and diving headfirst into the end zone. Thrilling. Okay, I would have done something like that. But the scant few memories we have of players and games from the last 25 years, including the ones involving Sean, are a fraction. They pale in comparison to what came the 25 plus years before Dan arrived. This was a different organization before Dan bought the team. It was a winner. It was classy. It was smart. Now it's the opposite of that. There's no way that if Sean Taylor had played for that group, the pre-Snyder group, that his memory would be handled in such a disorganized way over and over as it has been the last year. I'll never forget Sean. I hope the family is happy. And as long as they are pleased with yesterday, then that's fine. You know, we can move on. Their feelings are really important. I'm not discounting the feelings of many of you who are really angry about yesterday and were really angry about the jersey retirement ceremony. My only request here is that it's over. All right? This is it. I predicted Denton over the summer. I said, I guarantee you there's going to be another go-to Sean move at some point during the season. I mean, my God, they've retired his jersey already, but trust me on this, there's going to be another Sean moment or two. They've been obsessed with it, and I know, again, this is not in any way meant to say I don't understand the feelings that the owner has for him, that many of you have for him, that I have for him. But it's over now for at least the time being. Let's wait 5 years until the 20-year anniversary of his passing. And to be honest with you, you know, the passing date, let's, you know, perhaps find something less sad. Everything about Sean makes me nostalgic. I loved those years. I loved him as a player. I loved him in number 36. I loved him in number 21. Yesterday, the organization did what it did, and I expected it. They did what they thought was a good idea poorly. Self-inflicted. Didn't need to happen. Ben Standing at 8, my complete game take when we return. This is the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com, and we are free and live on the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
No, but they're going to keep using McLaurin across the football field.
Catch made by Robinson out of the backfield. He powers ahead. What a play by the rookie. And Washington jumps out in front. Brian Robinson.
Yeah, I think Brian Robinson Jr. is going to make it onto that list of things that I liked today. 19-13, Washington hangs on for its third straight win. This is the first time in a long time since Washington has had two three-game winning streaks in a season. This is the latest they've had two games over 500. They've been two games over 500 since 2008. In 2016, they were 7-5. And one after 13 weeks. And they are obviously not only in the playoff picture, they'd actually be in the postseason if the season ended today. But it doesn't. Five games left, the next two against the Giants with a bye week sandwiched in between. Really, I can't remember two bigger games against the Giants this late in the season. It's been a long, long time since we've had that. 2012, you had a Monday night game late in the season against the Giants. It seems like the Giants have been a late season game, especially in the Meadowlands for some reason, that has meant very little. All right, let's get to my game take. All right, overall, there were several things I liked in a game that was really evenly matched. I've got to give props to Logan Paulson, who came on my podcast on Saturday. And he said, this is going to be the team that they struggle to stop the run against the most. Because I really felt like going into this game on Friday that Washington would be able to stop the run and make Atlanta one-dimensional, and it would be an easy win for Washington. It wasn't, and when we get to the list of things that I didn't like, it will start with the run defense for the first time since week two. Really, there was some weakness defensively. But man, this was an evenly matched team between two teams that want to run the football in different ways, of course, and play some defense and not make too many mistakes. And the biggest mistake of the game was made in the final minute of the game when the ball was deflected by Daron Payne on a throw that actually I think would have been completed to Cordarrelle Patterson. Whether or not he would have scored is a different question, but Washington would have had time left. Remember that. Had they scored to go up 20-19, the missed extra point was really looming big in that spot. All right, what I liked. I'm going to start with Brian Robinson Jr. It was his best game, period. He had an excellent game 2 weeks ago on Monday Night Football against the Eagles. I thought he was outstanding. I thought he ran with better balance. I thought he ran a little bit less upright. He's been fantastic, obviously, at yards after contact, as Gibson's been. But when you rush for 105 yards on 18 carries, averaging 5.8 yards per carry, and you protect the football the way he did, and some of those runs were runs after contact and just incredible bulldozing strength to run people over or carry people for yards. Brian Robinson Jr. was excellent. I think actually he was the star of the game on a day where, and really on a team right now that clearly has an identity. You know, we have asked for team identity for a while. These last seven games, this 6-1 stretch, this 5-1 stretch specifically with Taylor Heinicke at quarterback, this team has an obvious identity. Play defense and run the football and don't make any mistakes. You know, knock on wood, they don't have any fumbles with their running backs. I don't think they have a fumble from a running back this year. You can check on that for me, Denton. I don't have internet, by the way. With that plane crash, that wild event in Montgomery County last night, you know, the power was lost to all of Montgomery County. I've got no internet right now. I do have power on a generator. I just have no internet. But I don't think that they have a running back fumble this year. I could be wrong. I know Gibson hasn't fumbled. I'm pretty sure Robinson Jr. hasn't fumbled. He was outstanding yesterday. He was everything they hoped for when they drafted him. And I think we've now seen that in two of the last three games. And obviously, it was going to be a slow start, slow acclimation after what he went through in August. But Brian Robinson Jr. not only had 18 carries for 105 yards, averaging 5.8 yards on a day where it was rainy, and this is their identity anyway. He had that incredible catch and then just running over two would-be tacklers into the end zone for the first touchdown of the day. Second on my list, the offensive line. I thought that there were holes. You know, the Monday night game in which they really ground out all those tough yards against the Eagles, there wasn't a lot of running room. You know, there just really wasn't a ton of running room. More last week. But I thought that Robinson, Gibson, and then Jonathan Williams, who came into the game, I thought they had real running room. I also thought that for the most part, the play-action throws, there was good, solid protection. There were a couple that Taylor had to extend, but that was fine, no sweat. That's what he does best. But I thought the offensive line had a good day yesterday. One of the best days they've had all year. Now, I said on Friday that I did think that, you know, this was a team that Washington could have the most success offensively they've had on a team in a while. You know, Atlanta was not a good defensive team coming into the game. They were the 30th ranked third down defense in the league. Washington was 5-for-12, pretty good on third down yesterday. And I thought that this was an opportunity for the offense to significantly contribute to a win. Not that they didn't contribute in a major way against Philadelphia, because the domination of the ball, the time of possession, the number of plays, the play difference in that game. I mean, did you watch Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia last night? The best defense Washington played was their own, but really the offense they played in that Monday night game by dominating the time of possession by nearly 2-1. But I thought Atlanta would be a team that they could really have a big offensive day against. They didn't. They really didn't. But offensively, running the football, there were really, really good running lanes. And I thought Robinson and the O-line did an incredible job. I am curious about Gibson getting pulled from the game. I don't think it was an injury. For Jonathan Williams. I know they like Jonathan Williams, and Jonathan Williams is on my list of the things that I liked from the game yesterday. 4 carries, 22 yards. I mean, Jonathan Williams last year, I knew it in that, I think it was the Monday night game against Seattle. I forget which game it was, but I remember asking Ron Rivera when I had him on, I said, "You guys really like this Jonathan Williams kid?" He said, "Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We think he can be a really good runner, especially in between the tackles. He's got great vision, and he is physical. And he was healthy yesterday, and you can see they want him to get carries. You know, they've got three guys. They really prefer Gibson, obviously, in a different, in a slightly different role, even though I think Gibson's fine between the tackles. But Jonathan Williams is on the list of things that I like. Terry McLaurin. Four catches yesterday for 48 yards, but six targets. And it's just amazing to me how wide open he is on so many of these throws. I mean, there was the near pick on a really good play by their corner there, you know, in the third quarter, right? I think it was the third quarter. But there's just so many plays. I think Scott Turner gets a lot of credit for what's going on right now. He is scheming up so much action. He is scheming up incredibly complex looking route structures, especially when you've got three guys running all sorts of crossers in the middle of the field. But McLaurin is wide open. I'm not sure right now Washington's had a receiver in a long, long time that is so difficult to check off the line of scrimmage. Terry McLaurin on the list of things that I liked from the game. By the way, you know, Bates, three catches, 24 yards, including that touchdown catch. Good job from him. And I thought the one catch from De'Ami Brown was an outstanding catch. You know, the ball was put on the outside. He had to go get it. I'm not saying it was a bad throw, okay? He was open, obviously, but he went out and got it. That's like you know, he's done that now a couple of times where he's made some big catches. He made that big catch at the end of the first half against Philadelphia that set up that big field goal from Joey Sly. Also on the list of things that I liked, let's move it to defensively. Daron Payne and John Allen and Montez Sweat were all outstanding again at times. But Daron Payne in particular in the game, making the plays, had a big set, had two tackles for loss, but having that big deflection, the play of the game that led to the Kendall Fuller interception, Daron Payne is the one that makes it to my list of guys that deserve kind of special kudos for their performance yesterday, because this was not the best performance by the defense. Don't let the points on the scoreboard fool you. This was a fast-moving game with not a lot of possessions and not a lot of offensive plays, because both teams were running the football so much and the clock was churning. Again, I mentioned in the open, they hit the two-minute warning at 1:59 p.m. I've never seen the two-minute warning come before 2 o'clock in a 1 o'clock start. Daron Payne on the list of things that I liked. And considering that St. Juice was out, which was, you know, obviously a big miss yesterday, Kendall Fuller really stepped up. You know, there was a bubble screen. Ever since he got here, you know, before he went to Kansas City, his first go around here and now this one, there's nobody that sniffs out a wide receiver, you know, tunnel, bubble, whatever you want to call it, screen, better than Kendall Fuller. He is outstanding on those plays. I think his instincts are so spectacularly good when it comes to playing that position. And then to make the play he made off that deflection in the end zone, that was not an easy ball to come up with, to cradle that thing before it hit the ground in front of Cordarrelle Patterson, was one of the plays of the year. You know, kind of is a make good for the Tennessee game ending. So we're kind of even up on games that, you know, could have lost and could have won. Could have won the Tennessee game, could have lost the game yesterday. Again, if they had scored on second and goal or third and goal or fourth and goal, Washington would have had some time, unless they really ran the clock after Washington burned their final timeout. So there would have been time for field goal range. But Fuller had a very, very good day. And then lastly, on the list of things that I liked from the game yesterday, thank goodness Marcus Mariota can't throw the football. Thank goodness, because with as efficient and as successful as they were running the football, you would have thought there would have been bigger opportunities. And, you know, the throws that he did complete were barely completed. I mean, Drake London picked one up off the ground barely on a play in which he was wide open on play action. I mean, he threw the touchdown pass on a really well-designed play as they ran ran it down Washington's throat on that drive. And play action should have been more effective for Atlanta. I understand there was no Kyle Pitts. I understand, you know, they had some players out there, and without Pitts, it's kind of a new crew. But Marcus Mariota can't throw the football. Thank goodness he can't, because I think there would have been bigger opportunities for Atlanta with the way they ran the football. All right. The list of things that I didn't like next when we return. You're listening to the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
A wet turf out there today. Heineke deep drop. Down the middle, he threw it away. Michael Walker has the interception. The linebacker just had it right into his hands. And Atlanta, after being unable to push for a yard on offense, their defense gets them the ball right back with 14 seconds left.
All right, the list of things that I did not like. Man, for a team that has been lights out against the run this year, Washington really struggled for the first time since week two against the run. They got run on by Detroit. They got run on a little bit by Jacksonville in the opener. And since, they've been the best rush defense, if Tennessee hasn't been, in the league. It has been what's led them. You know, they've been a front-to-back defense that's been sound, strong, disciplined, well-coached. But really, it has started with their ability to completely shut down the run. And they didn't do that yesterday. They gave up 167 yards on the ground at 5.8 yards per carry. Marcus Mariota running the read option. Look, this was good preparation for their next two games with Daniel Jones. Hopefully they can adapt, adapt to it. But man, that the Falcons saw something with the zone read keeper. By the way, I just want to make sure everybody's clear on this. There are RPOs, there are ROs, read options, and then there are combinations of both on a play. But what you saw Mariota doing yesterday, those were zone reads. Those were read options. Okay, those were not plays which he was going to throw the football. They were reading the outside DN, James Smith-Williams, on a couple of times. If he crashes, he keeps the ball. And I thought Mariota, as bad as he was throwing the football, thank God, I thought that he was outstanding in his decision-making as a read option quarterback. And I thought he looked quick and fast as well. And that was a big part of their running game. He was 6 carries, 49 yards. The kid that I loved before the draft that I wanted Washington to draft, Tyler Algier from BYU, 11 carries, 54 yards. Cordarrelle Patterson, 11 for 52. The kid Caleb Huntley, who's been hurt, came in, had one carry for 12 yards. 29 carries, 167 yards, 5.8 yards per carry. They got run on. And I mentioned this at the top of the show. Logan Paulson told me on my podcast Saturday, and I was very surprised. He said, this is their biggest challenge against the run this year. It's the biggest challenge that they've got left. This is a big, nasty offensive line that can really and does match up well with Washington's front. And he said that the game lies right there. If they can't run the ball and you make Mariota one-dimensional, it's over. And we talked about that on Friday, and I expected that they were going to be able to stop the run. It's hard to imagine, after they held Damian Pierce last week to 8 yards on 10 carries, and what they did to Philadelphia the week before, and what they did to Minnesota, what they did to Dalvin Cook, etc., the list goes on and on, that they were going to get run on by anybody. They got run on yesterday. That tops the list of things that I didn't love from the game yesterday. And it was a surprising thing, although Logan gave me a heads up, and he was right. They got beat at the line of scrimmage, and they got beat with Mariota's decision-making in the read option game, his ball handling. And by the way, his pure athleticism, you forget Marcus Mariota is a hell of a runner. And I've seen in recent years a guy that looked like he was kind of slowing down a little bit. He had some quicks and some acceleration yesterday. He was a couple of times just a shoestring tackle from a much bigger run than the run he had. So number one on the list of things that I did not love from the game was their run defense. I hope it's the last time we say that this year, because you've got two games against a run-first team with a dual-threat quarterback and a great running back coming up. Then you have maybe the best rush offense team in the league if Philadelphia isn't in the 49ers. Then you have a team in Cleveland who loves to run the football. We don't know what they'll look like with Deshaun Watson. And then you've got the Cowboys, a run-first team as well. So yesterday was a bit of an alarm for me. I thought this team defensively could carry this team not only to the postseason, but to a road victory, depending on the matchup when you get to the postseason. Because in this league is, you know, what's back this year, what's in vogue, run the ball, stop the run, win the turnover battle. The old school formula. And it's, you know, very present in the NFC. They got run on yesterday. Number two, Joey Sly's missed extra point was massive. If they had lost that game 20-19, that really would have been unfortunate. You know, it's been a while since he's missed a kick. He's now on his, I think he's 13 for 13 now on his last 13 field goal attempts. So that's great. And he had two big, you know, field goals in the game yesterday. And he hasn't missed a PAT since week two? I forget now. But Joey Sly missing that extra point could have been the difference between 7-5 and in the postseason and 6-6 and a completely different outlook on the postseason. Not that they would have been out of it by any stretch, but there you would have thrown another team into the mix in Atlanta that you didn't own a tiebreaker with. And it would have been a disheartening loss for sure. Thirdly, on the list of things that I didn't like, I thought Taylor Heinicke before the interception at the end of the first half was super sharp. You know, he was five for his first five. Play action was working. They were blocking up play action. Their ability to run the football here in recent weeks should really make it easy, especially with the receivers they have, for some of the play action stuff and boot stuff. I'll be honest with you. I don't think he's a great thrower on the move. That just, especially on the design QB keepers or bootlegs, as we call them. But that interception before the half was a horrendous throw. Horrendous. And he got lucky on the throw to the sideline that was late and a bit of a floater on a ball that we thought was picked off that did hit the ground. I think that was the right overturn. And I love what the league's doing, by the way, with the, you know, with the quick, you know, call from New York saying you don't need to make the coach challenge that. That's not an interception. That's an incomplete pass. Seeing that this year has really been great and has sped up those moments that can take, you know, 2 to 3 minutes or more sometimes. But the interception at the end of the first half was an interception that cost them points. You know, after they got the stop, it cost them an opportunity at points there before the half. And by the way, gave Atlanta an opportunity with a long field goal attempt for points that, you know, for them at halftime. You know, again, there were good moments from Taylor, and I'm going to go through his performance here in a moment. But that interception before the half makes the list of things that I did not like from the game. That list, though, isn't that long. You know, I think for the most part, this was one of those games that was very condensed. Washington had 8 drives in the game. That's it. You know, the Atlanta had 9. That's it. You know, the play count was like in the 50s. I think Washington may have run 60 plays and Atlanta 55 plays in the game. Washington owned a 7-minute time of possession advantage, which was really, really solid. That was a big deal. And they were in one of the reasons for that is they, you know, converted 5 of 12 and Atlanta converted 4 of 10. And Atlanta missed on their fourth down and Washington made their fourth down, their one fourth down opportunity. This was a game that was played with few penalties. So again, you know, a fast moving game. And so I, you know, the opportunities that were there when you run 80 plays or 78 plays offensively, you know, weren't there, which is a good thing and a bad thing. You know, it's a bad thing if the other team ends up having a lot more plays, but they didn't. It was one of those games in which it really was played between two very evenly matched football teams, and Washington got the big play, the play that's going to decide a lot of their games down the stretch. you know, a turnover that went their way, a turnover at the end of the first half that didn't hurt them, ultimately in terms of points, and a turnover at the end of the game that pretty much won the game for them. All right. Other observations from the game, and then your chance at 7:15 to weigh in with calls at 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.